Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 19th through the 21st, 2017 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 177, Creepy Hollow Restored with Mike Johns. So I want to welcome all of you, new and longtime listeners alike. You are in for a treat this episode. So for those of you who are unfamiliar, episodes tend to have a lot of stuff in them, and we don't really expect you to remember it all. But you don't have to worry. You only need to remember one thing, and that is the link to the show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR177. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR177. And that'll have links to things we talk about, and it'll have all the other kind of stuff that we cover. So you can just enjoy the episode. You can listen while you're commuting or you're painting, you're at the gym. We're gamers, we don't go to gyms, but any of those kind of fun things, and you don't have to worry about like, oh, I need to write this down because they talked about this or that. Nobody does that when they listen to a podcast. So we try to make it easy for you with the show notes. So on today's episode, we are joined not just by me, because I know you love to hear me, but we have my co-host, Mike Payne. Mike, how are you today?
I'm good, Jonathan. How's it going over there?
It's going okay. Looking forward to seeing you in about a week, although when people listen to this, we'll have already seen each other at TotalCon and be gearing up for our next convention after that, but it'll be nice to see you in person.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
And we also have a very special guest today. I'm referring to the gentleman who I mentioned in the name of today's episode, Mr. Mike Johns, who is I'm going to refer to him as a terrain guru, but he's very artistically inclined, something that I always admire in others because I am not. I'm all thumbs when it comes to any of that kind of stuff. So anyone who can make a pretty picture or create something beautiful, I just desperately admire and think, oh, if only I could. And I'm always told you can, but trust me, I cannot. So I want to welcome Mr. Mike Johns. Mike, how are you today?
How you doing there, Jonathan?
I'm doing okay. For those of you who are watching this live, and you can watch live, and you can even see these episodes or video of them on YouTube, you'll be able to see in the background of Mike all this artwork. I know it's a bit of an aside, but do you want to tell us a little bit about that artwork? It's very pretty.
It's a studio called I Paint Today. It's in Chelmsford, Massachusetts. And basically, as you can see, we do lots and lots and lots of art. We teach people how to paint, inspire people how to paint. Just like you said before, you know, you always look at stuff and you're like, wow, you know, you're really inspired, but you feel you can't do it. Here, we make the possible. We make it possible. The impossible becomes very possible here. There's no doubt about it. Absolutely. People walk in thinking I can't do it. They walk out with a very nice looking painting and they learn something. They learn they can do it.
It all looks really good. So.
It's very nice. It's very nice. I mean, this is just, of course, just one wall. Of course. If you looked around the rest of the studio, there are paintings everywhere, as you can well imagine.
It must be a very nice atmosphere for you to create and to be creative in.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. Absolutely. It very much so is. You know, when I do my terrain in another part of the studio, but it's very nice. It's very laid back. It's very, very, very creative. People, you know, come walking in here with all sorts of ideas. The people who are here all the time have creative ideas. So sort of like, I don't know, sort of like a giant workshop, you know?
Ideas. I like that death ray you just made.
The what?
The death ray you just made. I like that. That's nice.
Yeah, that was a 15-minute special.
Nice one.
Yeah, I was beating myself up trying to figure out what I was going to put at the top of that piece of terrain, and I just decided I don't know, I was sitting down, I had a bunch of junk on my desk, and I started fiddling with it, and the next thing I know, there it is. It was that easy.
It looks pretty cool. We're going to have a death ray duel someday.
Why don't we talk about the train a little bit? I know that on Facebook, people know you from your Creepy Hollow Restored Facebook page, and you do a lot of that branding on your YouTube channel as well, but why don't we just kind of dive into the whole terrain making sort of thing? It's something that you are very skilled at and that you do a lot of. So how did you get into it?
By accident. I wish I could tell you there was a great cosmic plan, but there wasn't. I started out painting miniatures, and then it became a natural extension that I would want in my miniature painting to play games with them, obviously. And then I needed the terrain. So one day I said, well, I need terrain. And I just, I bought a couple of pieces right off the bat. And then I realized, wait a minute, I can do this. And obviously that's where it led me down this path. But it's all steps. You know, like my mission is like to help people, because the ones that don't think they can do it. You know, I want to inspire people to look at that piece of foam board or, that X-Acto knife and not be like terrified of what are they going to do next. You know, it's a lot like painting here at the studio. When people walk in, I mean, occasionally we've had some workshops here where people come in and I teach them techniques to make terrain. And just like when I go to conventions and people look at my board and they say, wow, that's great. How'd you do this? How'd you do that? I live for that question. How do you do that? Because 9 times out of 10, the person asking me has absolutely no clue. And when I tell them, they look at me and they say, that sounds so simple. I could never do that. And I'm like, if it sounds simple, it is. You could do it.
You had done a piece for your YouTube channel, and it involved, I believe, old, like the inner cardboard core of from a roll of toilet paper, a kid's juice box, and something, a Pringles can, I think, and you put it together to create this Frostgrave tower. And I was watching this video, and I thought, okay, that looks amazing, but if I saw those components, I'd be like, oh, look, these are things for me to put in the recycle. Or I'll put them aside thinking I can make something out of it, but I can't.
You know, the funny thing, John, is I have boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff that probably the average person would look at and say, okay, that needs to go to the dumpster, you know? But like, for instance, that tower, nothing happens in a vacuum. Any creative person will tell you that nothing happens in a vacuum. You see an idea, you get inspired, and one of two things happens. Either you try to copy it, or you'll take that idea and go to the next step. And I just happened to look at that particular, I saw a picture on Facebook, someone posted it of a tower, and they did it completely different than I did. And I said, well, I could do that, but let me try something different. And then that's where I got, I took the Pringles can, and rather than do what this guy had done, I think he took like textured wallpaper or something. And he wrapped it around the can, and it looked very good, But I said, I can do something a little bit better, a little more. And I like to do my thing. I like chunky. I like gritty types of things. I don't like to do, like, polished, spit and polish pieces of terrain. I like my stuff to look really kind of used, you know what I mean? And the toughest part of that whole project, believe it or not, was cutting all the little pieces of foam core to make the blocks to go around the Pringles can. I mean, that was the hardest part. Anybody can cut with a pair of scissors. You can cut blocks and then glue them on. You see what I'm saying? But people look at it like it's some sort of magic, and it really is no real magic. It's just having a picture in your head and following it through. You know what I mean? I mean, we have this we have this gaming club up in New Hampshire. It's called Mad Underground Gaming, and you go in there, and the guy Dave Valentine is the guy whose place is where we do this at. And you go in there, and you're right, and he's a great guy. And you look at some of his stuff when he started at the very beginning, and how much he has advanced through practice, and anybody can do it. I mean, Jonathan, I swear to God, you could do it. I mean, anybody could do it. But the thing is, see, you're a family man. You got children, you have a wife, other responsibilities. See, I don't have those things. So I have time. I can just sit there and concentrate and do it.
Trust me, some people are helpless and hopeless, and I am proof of that.
One workshop, I guarantee you, you come to one of my workshops, you're walking out with a nice piece of terrain.
I believe
that. You believe yourself.
Do you know what? I don't doubt that, but the problem for someone like me is, what do I do when you're not there? Because then I panic, and then I'm like, well, what do I do? I have this stuff. I'm sure it can go together somehow. I'm sure I can make something. I can make my tower. I can make a whole city. But, like, really, how? And I'll stare at the stuff, and I won't get anywhere. I'll look down and be like, okay, now what do I do? I know I'm supposed to. The instructions say I can, but really.
Dude, I don't want to say anything, but when you're intimidated by recycling stuff, you got issues.
Well, like, I used to try back, oh, God. I don't want people to know that I'm older than what I might appear to be. But back when I first started wargaming and doing Games Workshop stuff, I tried with to make things for Warhammer Fantasy and 40K. And I was like, I'll make a wood because woods are really easy, right? And I have pre-made trees. All I need to do is like make a tower that's going to go in and make some sort of base. So I read their, like, how to make wargame terrain book, and I looked at it and said, okay, it suggests using cardboard. I was like, I'll get cardboard because boxes, it's easy to get, right? So I got the box, and I cut it out for the base, and I was like, well, I want to put something down to make it look like grass, so I got the flock stuff. So I'm putting all this PVA glue down before I realized, you know, you're supposed to thin it down, and before I even knew that, it's going to make the cardboard curl up. Learning process. So I'm doing that, and I'm sticking all the flock down, and I'm just, like, throwing the flock at it. So I'm like, I got to get it on to make it. And I'm shoving the trees on, and there's an area I left open for a tower. And I remember reading somewhere online or whatever, Pringles cans are great. They're getting great free advertising on this episode. They should contact me so we can work out a deal. but I was like,
that's Pringles can
on there. And I took the lid off, and I'm like, it has, like, I'm a big sour cream and onion kind of guy. So it was probably sour cream and onion. Like, well, it has a green, but like, I'll deal with that after. Cause I want to get it on. So I'm trying to glue it on and trying to come up with a way to make it look like a wizard tower or something. And oh, it was so, so bad. There's one photo still in existence of this woods that doesn't have the tower because I was just like, the tower will work. What's wrong with me? And I had to toss it out. Hopeless. And it's not a whole lot better from then. Trust me.
Yeah, but you learned a lot from doing that, though, you know? What do you think? We were like that when we did our first things, too. Mike, wouldn't you say? Maybe not quite that bad, but...
My very first piece of terrain, all right? I 1 minute. I'm going to show you. I'm going to turn right around. I'm going to show you it. The very first one I did, okay?
All right, let's see it.
This was the first one I ever did.
Well, that's pretty good.
That looks great.
This was my very first one.
Yeah, my very first thing wasn't anywhere near that good.
No, see, that's me on a great day.
Yeah, well, you can have great days, you know.
See, the thing is, Jonathan, like here, like I have a three-tier system that helps people do terrain. You know, it helps unlock their creativeness, and it's fun, you know, and it lets them become comfortable in their own skin when they decide to look at that pile of recycling to do things. I mean, it all starts off, you know, with convention. You know, I do a lot of conventions, as you well know, as Mike well knows. And, you know, you get people excited. Like, we have TotalCon coming up, you know. I'm doing yeoman work at TotalCon. I'm doing 5 games in 4 days.
Wow.
So it's not a part-time job. It's a 20-hour commitment, you know.
And I don't know how you're doing that.
People think that, you know, they're going to think that that's a big deal. You know, you're just playing a game, but it's the take up, the set, you know, set up, set, tear down, set up, tear down, set up, tear down, set up, tear down. Not only does it gets exhausting, but the wear and tear on the terrain itself is just, you can well imagine, it takes a beat. So all the stuff I do, I have to try to make it durable because of convention specific, you know. If I was to do, I think Mike Payne once, Mike, didn't you say something about it being like, you know, you can do one or two things, you can look like a train set or it can actually be played on.
Right. Well, that's the thing. If you do it like a train set, it's going to have to be at home and nobody's going to touch it. If
right.
It's going to a convention, you can't do that.
Right. If I had like a designated place where I could set up a table and just, you know that basically it's not going to get abused, then yeah, the work would be probably even better than it is. But under the circumstances, you know, it's wargaming terrain. You got to look at it. Is it the Mona Lisa or is it a piece of terrain?
It's funny you bring that up because the other day I was listening to another podcast called The Veteran Wargamer. It's run by this guy, Jay Arnold. He's a very talented wargamer. He's actually doing a very good job with his podcast. He has, I think, 10 episodes out now. And I was listening to an older episode of it where they were talking about, and I can't remember the name of his guest. It escapes me at the moment. But the name of the episode was Be Nice with the Dice. And so they were kind of talking about social etiquette for wargamers, not just with dice, but with all of the things you bring, whether you need to make sure you bring like your tape measure and paper or pencils or special counters or minis, any of this kind of stuff. But they went beyond that, and they were trying to explain whether it's acceptable to use someone else's dice when you play a war game, or to use someone else's minis. And the guest on that episode was very much like, you know, people need to keep their hands to themselves, and like they need to bring their own dice because they should use their own dice and not use someone else's. And so I'm listening to this, and I was getting annoyed because I'm very much of a person who believes, like, okay, this is going to be a little facetious, but these are basically all toys that we're playing with. The toys are grown-ups. And if you're going to bring toys out to play with other people, you need to share. Otherwise, the toys shouldn't come out, and they should stay in your toy box and stay at home. So if you can't play nice and you can't share your toys, then that's another issue. And if you're going to bring these out to play with someone, whether it's at a convention or something else, I think you really need to do something that you do, Mr. Payne, in try to kid-proof them, or at least realize the things you're bringing are going to get a little battered around. And so if you're not willing to share your toys, then maybe you shouldn't be participating with other people.
Right. Well, you have to participate with people just like you. That's the only way that that's going to work, at least from my point of view. I know, you know, kids break things, and I like kids to play my game. So you know what? I'm not going to worry about them breaking things. Go ahead and break it. I can fix it.
That's kind of how I look at it. I mean, when you run a game at a convention, you have to expect damage. You got to expect things to disappear. You know, because it's an odd thing. You know, every once in a while, you put 20 D20s on the table, and you at the end of the day, you're packing up, and all of a sudden, you get 18. You look on the floor, and they're not there. Someone inadvertently probably put it in their pocket, forgot about it. Or laser pointers. When I provide everything for people in my game, so I mean, I have tape measures and laser pointers and dice, and it's all just there for them. But occasionally, I had a little girl at Carnage, as a matter of fact. She walked off with one of my laser pointers. She had it in her pocket, and she didn't realize it. And the next day, she walks up to me and says, "Oh, sir, I'm so sorry. I forgot to give you this back last night." And I'm looking at her like, first of all, thank you, because a lot of people would have just said, "Oh, well." But she was like 10. Very nice little girl. Very well brought up child. And she was so upset that she kind of, I guess she thought it was going to ruin my game or something, because I had one last. I'm like, no, I'll just borrow someone else's if you needed one, you know. And it's like, Every 4 to 6 weeks here, right? We try to do like this workshop. It's pretty cheap, and it's you're surrounded by people of like mind. That's like what Mike was saying. If you're of like mind and you both want to do the same thing, just because I have more experience than the person who's wanting to do it doesn't mean that's always going to be the case. Because trust me, I've seen people who just started doing terrain and put me to shame on their very first try. You know, I'm like, holy hell, you know, this person, and they'd be like, I didn't know I could do that. And, you know, and that's why what we try to do at our workshops, we just try new things, bring new people in, teach them new techniques, you know, or and that's true. That's another thing. If you're a guy who's been doing terrain forever, sometimes you'd be shocked at the things that some people have never worked with. You know, some people have never really worked with foam core. I find that shocking. But once upon a time, I can imagine I wouldn't even have thought about foam core. I wouldn't have known what it was.
I went quite a while before I started using.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, my original ideas were when I thought of terrain was sticks and styrofoam and
whatever crap I could get that I didn't have to pay for.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know. And then eventually, you know, like when they come here, they like, I'm dying to do a resin thing because I did not really have the opportunity to work with resin and pouring and mold making. And I mean, these are kind of advanced techniques for the average person, but you know, that's the thing. You know what I mean? That's what I like. I found these. Matter of fact, there's a good point. I was watching something on YouTube. A guy was talking about molds, baking molds for fondant, and he had this mold. And he said, "Oh, they come in all sorts of things." And he said, "This one's from mold. No, look, it's got stone texture on it." And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, all of a sudden, a light went off in my head, and I said, "Wait a minute! I bet you I can pour hot glue into that mold, and when it cools, I can peel it back and get a perfect stone texture on the hot glue." And that's exactly what happened. I just had to figure out how to do it, because I knew that the hot glue had to be flat, obviously. You know, you had to level it. And even though it's somewhat self-leveling, you still don't want the lumps on the, you know, the underside. So I had to sit there and take apart. I said, how do I do that? And I said, I'll take paper and I'll flatten it out. But then I said, oh, no, the hot glue will stick to the paper. And I'm like, okay, so what's my next move? Well, parchment paper, not, you know, like that baking paper you put cookies on, hot glue doesn't stick to that. So I just put the parchment paper over, took a rolling pin, rolled it flat, let it cool, peeled off the stuff, and I have all the stone texture I want right now for the cost of 10 seconds of hot glue. And it was just all by accident, because I looked at that and I saw what he did, and I took the next step. You know, and obviously it's not fondant, it's actually hot glue, but I said, okay, well, we'll see what will happen. And it worked, and, you know, just little things. You just pick them up, little technique, you know?
I want to start, resin would be great for that too, but I want to start using dental plaster, because it's pretty rugged stuff.
I've never used it, but I've heard some really good things.
Well, I have a friend that cast a bunch of her stuff for me with dental plaster, really rugged. So I need to get myself a box of that, or you and me need to split the cost of a box, because it's nice stuff.
I'm still making
of cool things.
I'm still trying to get the mold-making thing down. I understand the concept. I've watched 1,000 videos on YouTube about how to make molds.
Yeah, well, now you're just going to keep practicing.
Yeah, I'm
about at the same level you're at. I've made a couple.
I mean, my original thought molding was press molding. I would take some thermoplastic, I forget what it's called. I got mine from Green Stuff World. It's like blue. Put it in hot water, boiling hot water. You pull it out, it gets all gooey. You lay it down, and then you can take like an item, whatever it is, press it into it, let it, and then you take the whole thing, put it in cold water, it hardens, you pull the item out, and it's perfectly a nice imprint of the item on the other side. And you can put green stuff or you could put putty, plumber putty in there, or you could put you could put clay in there, air dry clay, or you could put, there's another thing I can't forget, besides green stuff, there's another, like a clay, a two-part clay you can put in there. And it'll harden in it. I mean, these are just interesting little things to try for people out there. You know, because who wants to go out and buy a $50 box of GW guys because you want shields. You know, I'm not a big fan of these guys who do that stuff and then they sell it on eBay, for instance. You know, recasters. They're basically stealing someone else's idea and they're selling it, which I kind of think is kind of dirty. It doesn't help the hobby.
Well, that's piracy, really.
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, I'm not saying I haven't made copies for personal use, but I don't really wouldn't think of doing it that way.
Well, nothing wrong for personal use.
Speaking of,
go ahead, John.
No, I was gonna say, speaking of terrain making tips, you were talking about like seeing a YouTube video and then taking the next step. If I came into you and I'm like, hey, I'm new in, or I'm terrible, which is really the case, what kind of advice or techniques would you suggest for me as a newbie terrain maker for me to kind of get into things at an introductory level?
As a new terrain maker, first of all, like I said, I highly recommend you get in with like-minded people. You learn from someone who knows. And the best way to do that, obviously, is person to person. That's why I highly recommend my workshops, because people get to come in and they really get to work with all sorts of different things. Like, just because, let's say you're good with something you don't realize you're good with, like wood, okay? There are some people out there who are very good with wood, and they don't really realize it. Then there are some people out there who like to work in plaster, or some people like, you know, like cardboard. I would say if it was you, I would say cardboard would probably be the best bet to start with. You can build with cardboard and, you know, did we lose you? Did you lose me again?
I don't know. It looks like we lost Jonathan.
There he is.
So cardboard is something ideal for me because I can construct it. So cardboard is the thing to go to for a new gamer or a new terrain maker.
You know, cardboard is cheap and it's good to go to. I mean, as long as you can use it. I'm assuming that everyone has the basic skills to use a pair of scissors and a ruler, and possibly, now I'm going to get high tech here, a hot glue gun. If you can use those three things, then you can create, you know, some really cool stuff.
Do kitty scissors count, those safety scissors?
Well, if they can cut. If they cut, they're okay. If
yeah. No. We use them here.
Then no, they have to go. And the ruler...
Once
in a while, I'll throw a ruler out there.
I'm not so bad as to have hurt myself with scissors, but around the holidays, I happened to, and thankfully it's gone, I stabbed myself emptying the dishwasher.
You might have to ask your wife to do the cutting.
I really need that a grown-up here, people. I need a grown-up. I'm trying to take the utensil tray thing out because it was stuck, and it flings open, and a knife stabs me, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm bleeding. And I'm like, what?
Catherine's almost old enough to help out.
She might have to do it for me. She's two. She'll be better.
You're not too mechanically inclined then.
No, there's a reason why I sit behind a computer for my job. explain why I don't do these things. And it's terrible because my dad is very mechanically inclined. He's great. He's a craftsman. And he could do all these things, and I cannot. I'm interested and I admire you, but I can't. But
you need to break out, Jonathan. You need to break out, get out there, and get a pair of scissors and a ruler and go for it, man.
Well, I saw on YouTube.
He's got a straight line.
This guy, he like does product reviews and he does life hacks and stuff. So he found this thing, and it's a glove you put on, and I think it must be made out of like that bulletproof kind of stuff. And you put on, and you can't cut through it, you can't stab through it. And I'm like, that's what I need. I need to wear these gloves so I don't like injure myself, because apparently
it'll be a confidence builder too.
I'm a toddler, I guess, when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Well, you know what?
There's a reason why I have a ton of Band-Aids by my workstation.
Mike, we're going to make Jonathan a project of ours, and he's going to make something.
Oh, that's quite a project. Are you sure you want to take me on?
Yeah. I need Mike's help. I'm not doing this all by myself.
I'll have to vest up for that. It sounds like Jonathan's the kind of guy, he's going to get hot glue everywhere, and the next thing you know, he's going to be super glue. He's going to stick himself to super glue. Hey, by the way, that's a thing. I've done that.
I will be wearing my safety glasses.
I super glued my hand to the table once.
Oh, see, I glue my fingers to my fingers.
Yeah, I've done that.
But see, that's why I only use gel super glue. See, safety first. Hey, I've got something special for you, Jonathan. When I see you at TotalCon, I'm going to pick. These are brand new safety scissors, still in the case. You get to pick
there you go.
The black one, the green one, or the orange one, and I'll brand it and give them to you.
One for every member of the family.
It's exactly. I love them. They use them for scrapbooking. They have. They remind me of safety scissors, but the blade has that really cool design, so you can do different borders. I love those things, I always think they can't cut very well, right? Because it's too intricate. But I think that would be great, something to use for wargaming, because you can get that and you can kind of cut out a template that you could use for stuff, and then
absolutely templates. You know, templates are very underrated, because you can. I mean, we use them here just even in painting. But
I never throw them away.
But when you get like I use hardboard to base all my terrain on, and here it's fortunate because we get lots of frames, and the backs of the frames are made with MDF. So I end up getting, I have a stack, you know, probably 3 inches high of all big ones, small ones. So I cut them into just uniform spaces, like 4-inch squares or 5-inch squares or 6-inch squares. And that's how I use that as my, like, I know that when I'm building terrain, that's my space. But, you know, I mean, obviously you told me you flocked it before you flocked your first piece before you put the tower down. I got to tell you, brother, not a good idea.
Flocking that's like closing the door before you go through it.
Absolutely. Flocking last, build first. Because you know what happens sometimes? And this is a truism. I started building terrain. I'm telling you, don't flocking first. Flocking first.
Oh man,
you're all done, and then you flock.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I've learned my lesson.
The base of a mini before you paint it.
Yeah. Well, see, now that you've made that huge step forward, just learning that. Okay. A little bit of information.
I'm really feeling the need to make me seem a little less like a moron by explaining that, like, this was a long time ago.
How old are you?
And admittedly, I'm probably not a whole lot better now, partly because I don't do, but like. That was so long ago. So I like
despite these stories, Jonathan, we still think you have the potential just about anything. We're not giving up on you yet. We might give up on you.
Well, let's pretend someone is as hopeless as I'm coming across to everyone listening to this.
Yeah, I don't think you're that hopeless.
But let's pretend that I am, or that there are people out there who either have no inclination to really try to do it for themselves, or who are just like, I tried, I don't have the time, and I'm awful. I'm so bad. And they want someone else to do it for them. It's my understanding, Mike, that you offer terrain making services, that you will do terrain stuff for people. Indeed. Why don't we talk about that a little bit?
That's great. I mean, you're right. There are some people out there who just want someone else. They don't have the time, you know.
Time's a big factor.
And they don't have this, they don't have that, you know, they're lazy, or they don't want to do it. I mean, yeah, I do that. I mean, I can do pretty much, you know, I prefer to inspire people to do it for themselves, but I do, you know, money's money, and I'm doing something that I like. It's better than digging ditches. So yes, I do that. And I make anything, it's custom made. I mean, see, people buy a kit, they don't want to put it together and paint it, you know, ring me up. I'm on Facebook, just, you know. come on down. And I mean, I'll take that money and I'll give you a quality product. And not to mention that, you know, I mean, I don't want to keep harping on this, but it's just like, it's one little baby step at a time. And then one thing, what will happen one day is you're going to ask any Valentine. One day you're going to, something's going to click. And the next thing you're going to try something different. And it may not work the way you hoped, but it's going to move you in another direction. See what I'm saying? It's one little step at a time. You know, here, especially here or in general, I'm here to help anybody do it. But yeah, I do commissions. I do painting commissions for terrain. I do building commissions and painting commissions, as you well know.
Why don't we talk about the process? In you mentioned me, and it's true. This is part of the reason why I brought it up. I've commissioned you to assemble and paint one kit and to paint one kit that's actually pre-made. Some of those old, why can't I think of the name? Architects of War stuff you can't get anymore. They're absolutely gorgeous, very well detailed, beautiful pieces. And I have, I think they call it Ye Old Barn, I think is the name of it.
Have Mike do that for you?
Yeah, I bought it. Oh, my good. Very first good. Huzzah. I bought this thing because I forget who was selling it. And I was like, Architects of War is awesome. I should get it. And it's super cheap. And then I won another piece, I think, at the auction. And they sat and they sat. And I was like, oh. And I'm never going to have time to assemble the barn. I don't think it's hard. It's just I'm not going to have the time. And
Mike's going to do a better job than you anyway.
Well, that's the truth. I completely admit that.
To be honest, I don't need to use these scissors. I actually can use them. You know, a real knife. And that's not to say I don't get cut. I get cut. I mean, I'm just healing up on my thumb. I gave myself a nice little... Why? Because I was careless. But there's a difference between being inept and careless. Being inept means you're stuck with these for the rest of your life. But when, you know, you just got to respect the knife and be careful with it. But like when I'm doing, like, for instance, when I put that barn together for you, right? First things first, you don't flock the thing first. The base doesn't get flocked.
Do you know what? I don't think the base is going to get any flock, though, because I think if you look, people, there'll be a picture in the show notes
that piece is all
I want to see it on the table.
Yeah, it's all sculpted. I mean, it's a completely made base. It's not just like a flat whatever. It's part of the whole thing. Yeah, and I think the building takes up the whole space pretty much.
That piece is screaming, dry, you know, basically painted, base coated, dry brush shit, and you're good. Because it's all pre-molded. I mean, those are the easiest things, bases in the world to do with those. You know what I mean?
Good place to start.
And it's a good gap. Actually, it's a very good place to start to learn to do techniques. Like dry brushing is very important, okay? And when you're doing terrain, you know, you need to be able to make those details pop. Like if I'm not mistaken, in that base, there's even like farm utensils laying on the ground or something.
Yeah, there's like a stack of hay, and then there's, I think, a bunch of like pig crap in a corner. I'm presuming it's pigs, but it could be, I don't know, cows or something.
And all it is basically you base coat the colors on the base that you want. Like most of it's going to be dirt, obviously. And then you pick out the details, base coat the details if you want to. Sometimes you don't even have to. Sometimes a dry brush, if I painted that thing brown and dry brushed it up, right, you'd be amazed at how easy it is, and B, how much of an improvement, just a simple dry brushing.
Mike, explain what dry brushing up means, because I bet a lot of people don't understand.
All right.
Although, actually, there's probably a lot of people that do that listen to the show.
Like, dry brushing is essentially, when you're doing anything that's three-dimensional, okay? Dry brushing is you find the color you want on the dry brush, on your brush. And let's assume we're going to use simple. I'm going to say, you get a dark brown base, you want to dry brush it up. So you go from a dark brown, then you get a medium brown. Get a thing on your, you know, paint on your brush, and then you wipe most of the paint off. And then you very quickly go over all the areas you want to pop. And all of a sudden, now they're going to be a lighter shade. And then you go to when you're done with that color, you go to a light brown, very light brown. And you do it again, and more of it pops. And eventually, once you're all done, the key with dry brushing is to make sure that you actually wiped off. I mean, a lot of times I use my hand, and I'll test it on my hand. And if I... right on where your thumb is, if I can barely see color coming onto my thumb when I'm brushing, then that's good. You know what I'm saying? And then it'll make all the details pop. Everything looks a ton better. Stuff that, sadly, it's actually, you can find out mistakes you made on your terrain because the dry brush just betrays you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it does. It does make things stand out.
Yeah,
maybe something you don't want to stand out.
It's a blob of glue you didn't see.
Right.
And it dried, and now you've got a problem. Or a lot of times, I just ignore it because if I can hide it, that's lesson number one. If you can hide it and you don't see it, it never happened. Even some of my terrain, you look through, like, we had a kid at the workshop one time, and you know, we were working together, and he's just, you know, he's making mistakes left and right. And I'm like, dude, don't worry about that. This is every piece of terrain, every craft that you do, every painting, halfway through it looks awful because it's not done. You know what I'm saying? You know, and I've gotten halfway through, like, I mean, that terrain piece, that very first one I did, that's all mostly, the outside is foam core, but the inside is aluminum foil, okay? So, but I had to make the stairs. I had never done stairs. I've never made a terrain piece before. I'm like, how am I going to do this? And I said, well, what do stairs look like? And I said, okay, so I'm going to need blocks. And I started cutting corrugated cardboard, and I started stacking them up. And I got it. And then I decided it was going to be spiral, of course, because, you know, it's my very first terrain piece, so I might as well do something really crazy. And then I just laid them around the outside. And then I'm like, okay, so now this corrugated cardboard looks. So I'm thinking, I'll just hot glue all of it, you know. And then I'm thinking, no, that's going to look really bad. I said, because it's going to look droopy, like it's melted, unless that was the effect I wanted, which wasn't. And then I said, I'll take it and cover it with aluminum foil. So I took aluminum foil, I cut it into strips, crinkled them up my hands, unrolled them, and, you know, pulled them back out. And I just started hot gluing the strips of foil all the way around the inside. And the effect is rather striking because it looks like stone. And that was all made up. I just improvised.
I like that idea. I might try that on Sunday.
You know, the only issue with the foil is to make sure that you make sure you adhere it well. White glue works, but it's a pain to wait for the drying. I use hot glue, but be careful, Jonathan. If you ever use hot glue is hot.
I'm going to have people now warning me about hot glue everywhere I go and handing me safety scissors. That will be my legacy. Not that I've been doing this for 10 years, longer than anyone else on the planet. But that once on an episode, I told people about how awful I am. And so here's the safety scissors.
We got to get you to turn out a nice piece of terrain because I know you got one in there.
Absolutely.
Right. And then once you do it once, you're going to want to do it again.
That's, you know, honestly, that's the truth. That's so true. Once you see that one thing that you created, and assuming that, you know, you didn't have to go to the emergency room or, you know.
Yeah, that slows things down a lot.
Yeah, that does. That's a problem. But assuming you don't go to the emergency room and everything goes hunky-dory, you would look at it and you're going to sit there and say, oh, man, that was great. Yeah. We'll send you an emergency health kit. Yeah, you have a little first aid kit to Jonathan.
Band-aids. Well, it was really nice having you on the show, so.
Band-aids, some look at it, I guess an ace bandage.
Yeah. When we get done with him, he'll be hobbling around like Long John Silver.
He'll be missing a hand.
Just call me Captain
Hook. We'll get you a hook. I have a peg leg
and a hook.
That'll look great at the war gaming table anyway.
Do I get a parrot too?
Sure, we'll get you a parrot.
They'll say, what happened to you? And Jonathan's going to say, oh, I made a building. Oh, really? Yeah, it cost me an arm and a leg. It's like running a game. Remember how there was some scuttlebutt about you running something at Total Con on your own? Remember when you talked to Gabriel a couple of weeks ago?
I recall the conversation.
Yeah, and how he basically tried to inspire you to say, you know, I'm going to run the game.
Inspire is one word for it, that's for sure.
Oh.
But in reality, it's just taking control of the situation. That's all running a game. When I run a game, like when I do Frostgrave at the conventions, you know, you're in charge. You're the game master. There's a reason why they call you master, because you're number one. I don't look at it that way. Personally, I think the players come for it. Because if they're not having a good time, then you're wasting your time. You know, I've been at conventions and played in games where they were just awful because the person who's supposedly running the game just lost control of the game. You know what I mean? And then no one had to come.
I do that all the time.
I thought it was intentional.
It is.
remember the game day? Mike Payne walks over. Remember, Jonathan? We're standing there, and Mike Payne comes walking through, and I'm like, aren't you supposed to be running your game? And, you know, and Mike goes, oh, yeah, they took care of it for me.
It wasn't that the one you walked away because they brought like stuff down for sandwiches and you're like, you guys run the game. I'm going to go get a sandwich. And I was like, wait, yeah, what?
They can handle it.
I mean, things went fine. But you know what? It's a testament to you, though, for how you've crafted your game and how you run it, that people know what should be done and that it can run without you. So if you can have something that can go on autopilot like that, I think that's a sign of a really
good... autopilot chaos.
You know, it's funny. It's funny. At Carnage, I generally get new players that have never played Frostgrave. So that entails a lot of work for me, having to explain rules and, you know, do the jazz that a GM's supposed to do. But on Sunday at Carnage, I was very fortunate to have six players who already knew the game. I literally went to the toilet and came back about 5 minutes later, and they had just kept playing. And it was great, you know. Now, my version, the way I play the game, because it's a convention, I had to tweak the rules a little, because normally Frostgrave is a one-on-one type of game. But in conventions, you want to get as many people included as you can. I upped it to six, and I had to do some automation on the board to make it kind of run itself. But generally, yeah, I mean, like Mike's game, if you look at Mike Payne's game, just to walk by, you look at the table, all you see is smiling faces and kids running around like chickens with their heads cut off. I played the one, what was it, the dragon one? Very first time in Huzzah.
That's this season's scenario, Return of the Hang-Eye Dragon.
And I walked up to the table, and Mike says, hey, you going to play? And I said, sure. Mike says, okay, who you want to be, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, Fu Manchu, whatever, I forget. And these kids are like, they're grabbing stuff, and I'm like, what's going on? So there's a gentleman next to me, somebody's dad, and I guess his kid was playing, and he was playing with his kid. I watched him and said, so what's the object of the game? And he tells me the object was to collect these treasures, and when you get some, you can turn them in, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I'm standing there. I said, okay, so what do I do? So he says, you just go around and collect them. So I said, oh, okay. And this little kid, about 7 years old, walks up and goes, you're dead.
I love it.
I said, what? He goes, you're dead. I just killed you with a fireball. So I said, okay. And then he says, but you can use your extra life and get your life back. So I said,
well, look at him, yeah.
So I said, okay, I gave the life to Mike or whatever. Mike says, okay, you're back. Kid walks up to me, you're dead. I just killed you with another fireball.
I don't know who this kid is, but I love him already.
He was funny. And then I turned to the guy and I said, no, I don't want to sound, I said, that little so-and-so is a real pain in my butt. And he said, yeah, that's my son. And I was like,
proud parent moment right there.
Yeah, then he goes, you know. He says, I've been mind controlled. I've been tossed out of alliances. I get turned into a werewolf. I'm looking at him going, and you can keep all the track of all this? And the guy was like, not really. I'm just going with the flow. But that's just, I mean, that's what Mike's game can be. That particular game. I played other ones. Well, you, Jonathan, you and I played one that Mike had run, which I thought was just tremendous.
Would that be the one in which I happened to win a game for the
first
time?
That would be the one. That's what I remember.
Not that I want to brag.
Yeah. Well, you had a good day.
You want a war game, but you can't cut with a pair of scissors. So...
So speaking of conventions, actually,
he's got more war game experience.
To move it forward, let's get into one of my favorite sections of the show here, because it'll allow us to actually talk about some convention. So it's a mailbag section, and that's where listeners and people can write in and share some feedback, constructive usually, and sometimes it makes it on the show. So from our Facebook page, which you can find at WargamingRecon.com/Facebook, or just go to our show notes, WargamingRecon.com/WR177. But listener Tim said about episode 175, which is our Cigar Box Battle Mat review, he said, quote, my early complaint with them was placing that garish label on the gaming side of the mat. It needs to be on the underside. If someone wants to know where I got the mat from, I'm happy to tell them. But I shouldn't have to fork out those prices to advertise someone's product in my games. Otherwise, it's a very nice mat, well made, and worth every dollar, unquote. So first of all, I want to thank Tim for his comment, and I want to say I agree with you. I don't think either one of you guys have seen any of these mats in person, but you will at TotalCon because it'll
no,
be...
I have.
Oh, the I Cigar have. Box ones? Okay.
There's a few guys that have them.
So
they're very nice.
Yeah, the gorgeous mats, and I think they're worth every cent. When I first opened mine and I looked at it, I was like, oh my God, look at the gigantic label on there that says Cigar Box Battle. I was like, it's kind of cool. It's recognizable. You know, it's their stuff. But I was like, why is it on the top of the mat?
If that was me and I was to own one of those, the first piece of terrain, I would build a piece of terrain big enough to cover it a little bit.
I was thinking the same thing.
But you know what? Because my first inclination was like, oh, look at this. It's large, but it's on the underside and you can't see it through. So I believe that Tim may have had an earlier version of the mats from when they first came out. They've been out for a few years now. So I think the earlier ones had it on the top. And I think, and I'm going to presume, they got a lot of feedback from people suggesting that you should not do that because we don't want that on our war game table. Right. And so it actually is underneath. And I...
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I have... I get three of them. Actually, these are wonderful. I'm not going to go off on the mats because I could. And I want to go grab one and snuggle it because they're... I have a desert one and I got a tundra one. So the tundra one, obviously, it's white-ish. And even with that, you can't see through it. And the desert one, even with that, you still can't see through it. So you don't know that it's a cigar box battle or whatever. So while I understand that if it was on the top, I would not be pleased by that by any stretch of the imagination. It's kind of like when you buy a car. I get annoyed that like the dealer has their name on the back of your car. I don't want the dealer to put their name there.
I don't even like the 4x4s that's on the side of my truck. I'd like to get rid of that.
And you know, it's not like a shame, like, oh, I don't want people to know I went to whatever the dealer was or the place that I have. It's just like, right. You should be paying me for that, okay? Like, I'm not advertising for you. Right. It shouldn't be there. So I'm happy that Cigar Box Battle, they don't actually have them on the top of the mats anymore, that it's underneath and it's not a concern. Because otherwise, I would be annoyed completely. I mean, you're paying money for these things. And again, they're not cheap. And Alex, who reviewed them with me on that episode, disagrees with me, but he's wrong. And he's not here to defend himself, so that's why I can say he's wrong. And I said he was wrong in that episode anyway.
That was a good episode, by the way. I listened to it.
Well, thank you. It's one I was looking forward to, and I'm looking forward to reviewing more of their stuff. But these mats are pricey. They are an artisan material. And Mike, as a creative person, I think you will really appreciate seeing them in person because it's high quality fleece. And then they put the imagery on there and it stays. You can wash these things and it doesn't come off.
Well,
and,
it's not like that neoprene.
No, it's not the mouse pad stuff. It's high quality fleece. And they're very soft. And they have a new version called plush, which is short teddy bear fur, which would make a perfect blanket for your bed. And I tried getting my wife to agree to let us use it on our bed so I could just climb underneath after playing games. She said no, but it's soft and you want to curl up in it. It keeps you warm. But the printing on it, it's phenomenal.
She said no.
I know. How dare she? Like, does she not understand?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't even ask one.
So the mats are great and they're things that you can get, oddly enough, at conventions. So I know that someone we all know, Gordon from Adler Board Game Cafe, sells them. He had some at Huzzah last year, and I don't think anyone's going to have them for sale at TotalCon. And I'm not even sure if there'll be anyone selling them at Havoc, maybe some other conventions, but people can find them. North Star, I think, sells them in the UK. They're all over the place, and they're really good mats. So if people want to talk some more about these mats and have other comments and feedback about those or other things we've talked about in this episode,
Save them your money and buy them from Gordon when you go to his. Keep them in business.
You know what he has, and he's how I first heard about them. I happened to get my mats direct from Cigar Box Battle because they were review products, and so then we worked out. But I'd love to hear from people about the mats, about anything else. Just comment on the Facebook page, and who knows, you might get your comment read on the air.
Mike and I are making our own mats.
You should.
Yeah, I'm not buying nothing.
Are you gonna cut out the fabric with those safety scissors, or will you use real scissors?
Wait, we're gonna save that.
How about use a sawzall?
There you go. And so, speaking of conventions, by the time people listen to this, TotalCon will have come and gone. So I'm gonna pretend it's in the past. Although for all of us, as we're recording this live, it's not yet happened. But I'm gonna presume we had a wonderful time. We enjoyed each other's companies greatly. We all had fantastic games that were well attended, and everyone was very well behaved.
Hey, Jonathan, no kidding, right? Attending games, game attendance. I have had either the worst luck or just, I guess, picked the wrong game because, I mean, I went to Huzzah and I only ran one game there at Huzzah, and it was well attended. I went to the OGC in Nashville. And let's just say it was a certain dearth of players for me. I think I was there the entire weekend, and I think there were two players who actually played in my game in 3 days. That's rough. That's rough.
Now, well, we're going to work on that.
Oh, yeah. Total Con, I have no idea how many people are going to play, on what days, whenever. You know, but it is really bad when you set up all your stuff. I mean, my table is, in those days, I was using a 10-foot table, and it was loaded. I mean, it was loaded with, Mike knows, it was loaded with terrain.
Look great. I got pictures.
I've since pared it down to about a 6-foot by 3-foot table because, you know, first of all, I don't need 10 feet. And it's great. People come by, oh, can I take pictures? Can I take video? And that's great, right? And then you say, okay, so who's playing? And there's no one there but crickets.
I don't think that's going to happen at
TotalCon. And I actually think that you're going to have a lot of luck at TotalCon because a game like Frostgrave is something that will do, and for people listening to this as a podcast, that has done really well at this weird time travel thing that happens in podcasts. It's very odd. But I think Frostgrave is perfect for a thing like TotalCon because TotalCon, really at its heart, is not a minis convention. It's not a wargaming convention. It is a RPG and board game convention. And so they say tabletop, and it is, but what happens there? And I was shocked when I discovered this, and I learned this from one of the people who helps organize and run the convention. TotalCon gets a lot of historical wargamers to go, but they go not to play historical war games. They go to play all the other things that they can't play when they go to a Havoc, when they go to a Historicon, when they go to a Fallen, when they go to a Hazar, or any of those kind of things. So they used to go into the historical conventions to play their Pites or Warhammer historicals or what Black Powder, any of these other things. But when they want to play something a little different, they play it at a TotalCon. So that's when they're playing in a Hing Hai event, or that's when they're going to play in a Frostgrave event. And so I've actually been very pleasantly surprised that every year that I've co-run a game at TotalCon, it's sold out. The first year, I was like, oh, it's not going to do really well. I'm really worried. And we did a Black Powder game. It was, I think, American Rev. And I was thinking, okay, it's not that audience, so how well is it going to do? And so we had like 2 pre-reg for it. But then people showed up, and they're like, can we play? Can we play? And then we had to turn people away. And there was one year we had only one person playing because there was a big snowstorm, and a lot of the people who had pre-registered for it had to leave early to go back to Vermont and Maine and New Hampshire because of the snow that was coming, so they had to get away from it. And that was the one time that it was bad. I tell you, I've never seen a table at TotalCon for minis that hasn't done well, and it may not... The first year might take a little while to build up, or even the first time you run it, you might not fill out with people pre-registering for it, but there's a lot of people who walk around, and if they like the way your table looks, they like the way the minis look, they're going to come in and they'll ask to play. And so a thing like Frostgrave, where you've made all this terrain and you've done so well with that, and you have these models that look really good, they're going to be excited to see it. Or if the game's really hot. So like the game Adrian and I are doing, we're doing a bolt action game. And bolt action is very popular right now. And the game sold out in like minutes, I guess, which honestly kind of shocks me because...
How do you find out if there's... How many people have signed up already pre-registered?
So one of the cool things about TotalCon now is that when you pre-register for the convention, and pre-registering has ended because the con's coming, but you can go in and you can pre-register for events. And when you do that, it tells you if you can book the event. And if you can, that means it's not been sold out. And if you can't, it'll say like sold out or no more room or there's no room at the end. Go sleep in the stables. Hey, I'm Catholic. I got to bring it back to Jesus in the end. That's when they're like, hey, there's no room. But even if the event is sold out, and every convention is different about this, but a great thing about TotalCon, even if the event is sold out, and it's going to sound like I'm humble bragging again, and I don't really mean to, but the bolt action game Adrian and I are doing is sold out and still encouraging people to come to it. So the game's 1 o'clock on Saturday. I know Hang High is 1 o'clock on Saturday, and you get a lot of Frostgrave games going. You might even have one at the same time. I don't honestly remember.
I have my Saturday is full, but I've got like I have 2 games. I have one from 3 to 11. I'm running 2 games back to back.
So I'm telling people, even if the game's sold out, come anyway if you want to play because someone might not show up, and that you happens. Only get 15 minutes as a GM that you need to wait before. Or no, 5 minutes. I think it is. It's not even 15. 5 minutes you have to wait. I think and. For the person to show up, and after that, you can give the spot away. So some guy comes up, some woman, I don't want it to seem like only men come to these things, because TotalCon actually has a lot of women who come, a lot of families, which is one reason why I like it. Someone comes up to you, some kid comes up to you and is like, Mister, I really like your game. It looks cool. Can I play? And you're like, I'm sorry, buddy, but it's full.
Now you'll know. Will you know before though? I mean, when you walk up to you set your table up, are you going to know if you've got a full house when you start to set it up, or you have to wait for all the stragglers to come rolling in?
No, you need to ask is what it is. You have to go to
When I go to the front desk to get my badge, I basically, when I was at Carnage, this is what I do. Like when I go to Havoc next month, and Hazai, I always ask how many people have signed up.
But that changes though. So some of like a thing like Hazai, people, Hazai's such a different beast. And I know for listeners, we're not actually in Hazai season yet, so it might be a little weird to talk about. But it's a different beast because at Hazai, people who go to Hazai, they pre-register for games. People who go to TotalCon do not. They'll pre-register for an RPG because they know Tim Kask and Frank Mentzer are there. They know that these guys are core people who created D&D and did all that kind of stuff. And they know there's a lot of old school RPG tourneys. So they're going to pre-register for that. They also know there's a lot of qualifiers for board games, things like Catan tournaments. I think there's an Agricola tourney, all those kind of things people pre-register for. But minis, as a rule, people do not pre-register for. So it's odd, in my opinion, for a miniatures game to be sold out beforehand. But what people do is they come up last minute and they look at your table and they walk around. So you might go and come the first day, get your badge, you check in and everything, and you're all set. Because I think you're sitting at the hotel like I am. But then the next day or even later that day, whatever you were told, if you're like, hey, how are my events doing? And later, 5 minutes later, it could be completely different. It could be, yeah, you may have sold out the spots, and they tell you that, but then maybe someone's not showing up, or maybe you didn't sell out all the spots, but you'll get people to play after you're all set up and you're ready to go, and people are walking around to see what's going on. Yeah, so you never really know.
One of the posts, she was talking about how sometimes the teams have spacing, they'll walk through the halls trying to drum up some support.
Well, that absolutely happens, and not necessarily for minis, because again, the thing people need to keep in mind with TotalCon is almost anything you hear about the convention is going to be focused on or geared towards the role-playing games and the board games, board / card games. And I'm not meaning like poker and stuff, but like
Magic.
I'm thinking more like some of those hybrids. I don't know if you've ever played, but Red Dragon Inn, it's a board game, but really you're playing with cards. You have these decks of cards and so forth. But things like that. Netrunner is another one. It's a board game, but again, there's cards and so forth. So that's what I mean when I say card games, not so much. But anything you hear about TotalCon is going to be focused on that. Minis happens, and they love to have the minis, but they know they can't devote the space to having a really appropriate minis area. And so they are very selective in what they have. And so no doubt GMs of miniature games do walk up and down the halls if they need to, but usually they don't have to because they're all told the same thing that I'm saying now, that because I was told this by the organizers back when I first did it. Bring your stuff, set up. You might not be sold out. Don't worry about it. You will most likely have at least one or two people who want to play, but they probably won't sign up in advance. They'll probably come to you because they walked around and they saw that your table looked good. So for TotalCon, a really important thing is to have a nice looking table. So as long as you have that, things are going well.
I hope my table looks good. Yeah.
I'm sure you're going to be just fine. And actually, for people who do go, I mean, other things happen besides the games. It's a gaming convention, but they have panels that are going on. And for here, for Wargaming Recon, we do some pretty cool things. We have this annual tradition of doing a listener meetup. So this year, people can come, or they will have come, because this episode comes out afterwards. But we're doing it at dinner. It's a pay-your-own-way dinner kind of thing. And there's a lot of impromptu gaming, so casual gaming, pickup games. So I'll be doing a lot of that. And we have a live recording of the show happening, or that will have happened at TotalCon, which should be really neat because we'll be using equipment that I don't normally use because I don't have to bring anything. It's part of the joy belonging to the TSR podcast network. So the guys from the Mythwits have their stuff, and one of them is going to be show producer, basically, for the episode, making sure, running the board, so to speak, making sure everything works, which is kind of nice. And that's going to be in the TSR playroom. So it's just like, it's a fun thing to do. And TotalCon, I'm a big proponent of, for TotalCon, maybe not every convention, but staying at the hotel if you can, because it makes a big difference. A lot of stuff happens spur of the moment that doesn't get advertised anywhere that you won't know about unless you're staying there and you happen to hear someone talking about something or you see something going on. So that's one of the reasons why I like to stay.
I didn't get into the hotel in time, so I'm like down the hall. I'm down the road like about a quarter quarter mile.
But you know what, though? That's still handy because although you're not staying at the hotel, it's close enough that you're able to stay fairly late, and then you'll be able to pick up on some of the things.
Yeah. And being there, I'm going to be there every day playing, running the game. So, I'm pretty much going to be at the hotel most of the, at the convention most of the
time. Yeah, I can't stay this year, but maybe next year.
Well, I tell you, it gets expensive doing it, and so I'm actually really happy. I'm going to be splitting a room with Adrian, and so that's going to be interesting for a variety of reasons. But it's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll see how things go and everything. But it'll be a good time, and the podcast episode that comes up from it, I think it's going to be a lot of joy for people. And that's one of the things I like. Here we are, we're talking about terrain making, but it directly relates to these things like conventions, but then relates to the game days and what people do when they game at home or the gaming at the game store. And so it's a neat way how it kind of all blends together. And I should actually mention for everyone as we're winding things down, first of all, that we should thank our sponsor, the Maine Historical Wargamers Association, and people listening to this episode, both in the beginning and at the end, you already heard the pre-recorded bit, but they put Huzzah on, and that's really kind of how we all kind of ended up getting together to meet one another. It was through Huzzah, so it's a great
organization.
They're
having a game day right now.
Yeah, I know, as we record, they are playing games, and we're sitting here talking about them. And actually, oddly enough, I was getting messages while we record from one of the gents over there, who is, I believe he's vice president now of MHWA, telling me about someone who has a game that might make for good content for the show. So it's neat. You form these connections and these things happen. And Huzzah's fantastic. So we'll be at Huzzah as well, but have to give thanks to them and have to give thanks to our backers on Patreon, because without them, the show wouldn't exist. Because it's nice to be able to buy or find your terrain making materials or hire someone to do this kind of stuff, but you need the money to do it and need the money to keep the show going. So I want to thank Patrick, Chris Parker from dayofbattlegames.com and Kyle from Vermont for being supporters of the show on Patreon. And we're in an odd, really odd situation here. So officially, according to Patreon, we're $2 away from reaching our next goal, or rather, we haven't reached our goal. We've raised the amount of money to meet it, but they haven't counted it as being met. So until that happens, and I don't know why, we're still waiting to reach our goal where that will then allow us to buy more equipment so we can record in person. So right now, all of us, we're in different locations.
So you're waiting to reach the goal that you've reached?
Yeah, I know. It sounds really dumb, doesn't it?
It doesn't sound right to me, Jonathan.
And hopefully by the time people...
We're going to have to go knock on some doors.
And I'm sure, I think I understand what it is. So the goal is we have to net $48 a month, and that they take fees and stuff out. So after all the fees, we have to bring home $48 a month, and that'll allow us to get equipment so we can record in person. Because Mike, you're up in New Hampshire, and Mike, you're out in Northern Mass, and I'm out in Eastern Mass. And even if we all lived on the same street, we'd have to stay at home and do it this way, and we couldn't be in one room together, which is kind of dumb, right? So having this equipment could allow more in-person things going on. But Patreon's like, yeah, you raised $48 out of your $48 goal, but it has not been met yet. And it's like, what? And their reason is that, yeah, you've raised that, but every month might be different with what the fees. So really, in order to meet it, we need someone needs to pledge a dollar who's not pledging any money, and then we will have met it. So that we can then go for the next goal, which is really important, especially in an episode like this where we had weird things go on. And so this next goal allows us to have our audio technician, Joshua Shoebridge, get paid what he should be getting paid for editing the show.
That would be nice.
Yeah, and he's a great guy, does a fantastic job. He's done radio, so he knows what it needs, and just these things happen. But it's all a result of having support from people who listen to the show. So Patreon is a great way to do this. And one, I'm very excited that we are able to have this crowdfunding for. And you can become a backer for as little as $1 a month, and you get behind the scenes content, and then you'll get episodes before everyone else who's not a backer. So it's pretty sweet. And I think this, and I've talked about it before, I think this would be great for both of you actually to do. You could have your own Patreon campaigns so that people could then support you in your terrain making efforts and your efforts for creating additions to Hang High and running these games that would allow you to get all these other kind of stuff. Because you've got people who love what you do, and that would kind of help with the buy-in to make life a little easier for that. And it's something to consider. I'm just saying, it works really well.
I don't think so.
I know you shot me down before, but hey.
Yeah, I'm still shooting.
Anti-aircraft everywhere.
That's right.
Yeah. Consider it, both of you. Seriously,
I did. I considered it.
That is not a consideration. I'm going to work you.
Well, you have your version of consideration. I have.
I'm seriously considering it. I mean, what's the worst that'll happen?
Yeah, I could see you doing it, Mike. It makes sense because you've got a portion of a hobby that you're devoting to a business, so that makes sense. I don't want any business in my hobby. This is about as business as I want to get. Being on this show.
We should talk about it at the convention.
Not a businessman. Matter of fact, a businessman is really not a word that I'm really fond of, I have to say.
So, as we move forward, I want to remind everyone that you can find out other cool stuff coming on in the show by going to the episode guide. There'll be a link in the show notes. The next episode, 178, releases on March 13th, 2017. That is the TotalCon 2017 episode.
Havoc
is April 1st.
Oh, so it's a couple of weeks before Havoc.
It is, and speaking of Havoc, which I'm glad you mentioned, I'm in talks. I haven't heard back from them, so if anyone knows any of the guys who organize and run Havoc and can nudge them, that'd be great.
I know a few.
I'm in talks with them because I want to do a live recording of the show, and I want it to count in such a way that it makes me a GM for the event, and I would love to do the live recording in the bar area, and I've asked if that would be of interest and if we can make something happen, and I've been told it's been put up to the powers that be, and I've not heard back. So I would love to hear back so it could be something made to happen so I can plan for it. And
yeah, I think the powers that be might take a little while to get their act together because those guys are not, you know, constantly meeting. So.
Well, and I've been told that they're not all necessarily tech savvy, which is completely fine.
Yeah, well, they have a few that are, though.
It's like just I put it out on the Yahoo group, and I believe I sent a message separately to an individual, and let's make something happen.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Huzzah's the main guys run Huzzah. They sponsor.
Yeah, MHWA do Huzzah.
And TotalCon is sponsored by just TotalCon, right?
Yeah, it's TotalCon LLC.
Right, so it's not. There's no one really sponsoring. There's no organization behind them.
It's a corporation. Havoc is Battlegroup Boston.
Right.
Which is Malden.
No, I don't know.
I think the location is not always a solid location. The last I knew, it was Malden. I'm not sure if that's right. I'd have to look into it. What's that?
Hobby Bunker, right?
Well, yeah, but I'm not sure.
But it's not the Hobby Bunker. I think they might count Hobby Bunker as a home for their gaming, but it's not actually like the Boston's location. I don't even think they have a location. I think they might meet at people's houses or something.
Yeah. Well, they used to meet at a church, but that was a long time ago.
I know they have information on their website. It's like battlegroupboston.org, I think it is.
Right.
Don't quote me on that. It's on Google. People can look for it. But
I got a bookmark somewhere.
I mean, either way, I will be at Havoc to do shopping, which is what I've done in the past. But I've never played games there, and I've never run anything, so I'd like to do both and be like a proper representation of Havoc for Wargaming Recon listeners. If we can make something happen, that is. I think it'd be a nice little thing to do.
I'm the minister of propaganda for Havoc.
Well, there you go. Make it happen, Mike.
I'm working on it. But awesome. Then again, you know, I'm not probably the best guy to have working on it.
Jonathan, you're playing in my game, aren't you?
I am. I will be one of those people who knows nothing about Frostgrave that you'll have to string along the way. But I'm looking.
Trust me. When
you get done, you'll know.
You got me and you got Adrian because I told him, Adrian, you got to play in this game with me. And Mr. Mike Johns is running it and we're going to have a lot of fun and it's going to be Frostgrave. So that's what we have to do. And he said, okay, I'm signing up. And so he should be signed up for that game too.
What day is that?
He was afraid you were going to ask and I don't know. I think it's a Friday. Night.
Now we know.
I think that's what it is. But don't quote me. I could be wrong. And actually people can find out by checking my TotalCon schedule, which has a link to it in the show notes, which you can get at wargamingrecon.com/WR177. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR177. And speaking of which, it is thank you to you both for this episode. It was a lot of fun. Why don't we give listeners a chance to stay up to date with each of you? So, Mr. Payne, I know you have some conventions coming up. Do you want to mention any of the cons that you're going to be going to?
Well, TotalCon, the next Saturday, I'll be there running Hang High and followed by Havoc, which I think we just said was April 1st. And then in May, I can't remember the date, but I'll be at Huzzah. And I think that's the only thing I'm signed up for right now. I'll be going to Council and all that in the fall, Carnage. But those are, they're not even taking games yet, so we don't have to talk about them yet.
That sounds good. And Mr. Michael Johns, how can people stay up to date with all the things that you are doing?
Well, let's see. I'm going to be at TotalCon also on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday of next week. My game runs at 7. The majority of them are at 7 o'clock, in case anyone's got some time and they want to play. I have also on that Saturday, I have a game scheduled at 3 o'clock, so I'll be doing a doubleheader on that day. Then after that, it's Havoc, the 3 days at Havoc, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday games, two of them at 7, and then one is in the morning. Sunday one, is in the morning. And then I'll be at Huzzah for the weekend at 7 o'clock. Two of them are at 7, and then one is at, like, I believe, 3 or 1, something like that. And then, like I said, anybody wants to connect up and do the, you know, for the workshops, check my Facebook, because I'm gonna have information when we start. You know, we get another workshop, a terrain workshop, and that's basically what's up. That's it.
Well, that sounds fantastic. So, thank you for being a guest on this episode. It was a joy having you, and I think there's so much more that we can talk about. You might have to come back on sometime in the future.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it. Sorry about the little hiccup we had, but, you know, this is what technology can do to you.
Through the magic of editing, there will be no hiccup.
I'll look at it later and I'll be able to know. I'll sit there and say, great things where I was talking to nobody in the room. Because I was in and I'm babbling like an idiot, and then all of a sudden I looked down and I realized that my Wi-Fi was out. I was like, what?
I want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. As you all know, you're familiar with the deal. The show notes is a place to be to find out more about what we talked about and links and all that kind of cool stuff. And no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, you know, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other great shows on the network.
This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew, who helped give the show its name. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 19th through the 21st, 2017 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.